With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You're listening to the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, presented by Krause Health, the exclusive healthcare partner of Syracuse Athletics.
Well, welcome back to another edition of the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, our first one of 2024. So that's exciting. And to kick things off with the new year, brought in my Syracuse.com colleague, Donna DeTota, to talk a little bit about the Orange and where they're at right now. 10-4 after last week's loss at Duke. Donna, what do we know about this team? I mean, it seems like we're 14 games in and still trying to figure a few things out.
Yeah, I mean, 10-4, but the four losses have all been by lots of points. So that is not good. If you're looking at it from an analytical perspective, the analytics are not going to love that they've lost games by a lot of points. But they've also lost a lot, I think, every one of those games on the road, if correct me if I'm wrong, or at a neutral site.
Yes, they haven't lost at home.
Yeah, they've been very good at home. So they need to, the Oregon win looks really nice now, that neutral site win. But they need to win a couple games on the road. So it's interesting. I don't know. They've looked very good at times and they've looked not so good at times. So here we are. We've got a lot of games to go. We're like halfway through the season, not even.
Yeah. You know, after that game at Duke, and like you said, it was another, not only a loss, but all these losses to Tennessee, Gonzaga, Virginia, now Duke, they're coming by like an average of 18, 19 points a game. The one at Duke was a 20-point loss. And I asked a few of the players and Adrian Autry, what do you have to do to close that gap? Now, a few of the players pushed back. They don't want to acknowledge that gap. Like, okay, but listen, the score is what it is. So I'm going to ask you, what do they have to do to close this gap between themselves and the elite teams that they've played? Because they're going to play a lot more elite teams. So they got two against Carolina, two against Clemson, a home game against Miami, not too far down the road here. So what do they got to do?
Well, one of the things is they can't turn it over. I mean, the turnovers killed them in the second half of that Duke game. I think that's one of the things. You know, I think they need to find some consistent shooters. Because when you get down in a game by 8 or 10, something like that, you need some guys who can make some threes. I mean, it would be helpful anyway. They really haven't had anybody who's been banging it down from the three-point line. And I think that would help, too, if they could get a score from the three-point line. I think they could be a little, I don't know how you'd say this nicely, but they could be a little more focused on the game and a little less focused on the officiating as the game starts going the way of the other team at this point. A lot of that is, I think you just need to be a little bit more mature in those situations. And a lot of it, I think, is you get a little frustrated. You know, you get down, you think you got fouled, and, you want to, petition the referee to say like, hey, I just got fouled. But in the meantime, the other guy's going down the other side of the court and they're scoring. So I think that's part of it too. I think there's a bunch of things that could happen that need to get a little bit better for them.
You know, you mentioned the three-point shooting, and the two guys I think that we all thought coming into the season were going to be their top three-point shooters, both in terms of volume and probably percentage too, Justin Taylor and Chris Bell. They've both been struggling lately. Now, I think they're two very different types of players, two very different types of shooters. So maybe we got to take them separate of each other. But let's talk about Chris and Justin and what can be done to get those guys on track from three-point range. And if you can get those guys going, I think you eliminate, you solve a big problem here.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could probably screen for them a little bit better. They're not getting a lot of easy, clean looks from the three-point line. Most of their threes are contested. Everybody gets paid in this business, right? I mean, coaches get paid and they get paid to say, here are their two shooters, guys on my team. Like when they catch the ball, get up on them. And so I think if they could get freed a little bit better, if they could free them a little bit better for shots that are a little easier, a little cleaner, if they could get something in transition, that's helpful too. Both of those guys take a little bit of a longer time to load it and shoot it. So they need a little time and space. I think that's one thing that Buddy Boeheim did in his career. Like he got better. His release got a lot quicker. And I'm not sure if those guys are working on that, but that's something I think that would help them too, is just releasing the ball a little bit quicker because they are going to face a ton of pressure from defenses. Like you said, those are their two known shooters. Those are the two guys Syracuse puts in the corners and tries to space the floor with. And so, those are two guys defenses are really concentrating on.
You make a good point there about Buddy Boeheim developing a quicker release. Joe Girard, I think, came to Syracuse with a really quick release.
He
I
was
think he had
guarded
to,
so much.
well, he had to develop it in high school because he was guarded by like five guys in high school and was still going to shoot. Buddy, he had to develop it, and he did.
He did.
I've been a little surprised that Justin Taylor hasn't been able to find a little bit more time, considering usually he's being guarded by the other team's power forward. He's playing out of position. He's having to guard fours, but they're guarding him. Maybe it's just because they're tall. They're maybe
They're
you
bigger,
can't get as
stronger
much
guys.
room. They're 6'8", 6'9". He's 6'6". I think Chris Bell's issues are different than Justin's. I think Justin, they got to get him a little bit bigger of a window. I agree with you on that. But Chris, I think he's in his head. And you mentioned
Well, that's
the.
part of it.
He gets upset with something in the game. He misses one. He's so streaky. I think they just need to get him to see the ball go in the basket once or twice, and I think he'd be okay. Now, in a way, this big long week they have between Duke and BC, maybe it gives him a chance to get in the gym and make some shots in practicing and kind of get his head straight.
Yeah, I mean that's what this week is probably going to be for, right? They're going to have him. He's going to take a lot. He's going to get a lot of reps from the 3-point line. Justin's going to get a lot of reps. Everybody's going to get a lot of reps from the 3-point line. Because the thing about it too is only having two guys is not helpful. You need to have more guys who can shoot it and more guys who can make them. So I'm assuming that they're taking a lot of threes and trying to make a lot of threes during this week between games.
Let's accentuate the positive for a minute here. The bench, especially the top three guys off the bench, Kwadir Copeland, Malik Brown, and Benny Williams, have really been playing well lately. Even against Duke, Malik Brown had a career high 26. Kwadir had his good and bad points in that game. We know about the turnovers, but he was still providing energy. I never felt like Kwadir was, not helping out there. Benny didn't have as good a game as he had previously against Pittsburgh. But the big question is, with some of the starters struggling and the bench guys playing well, if you're Adrian Autry, are you using this week leading up to the Boston College game to tinker with your starting lineup at all, or do you keep things the way they are?
Malik Brown's playing something like 32 minutes a game, 32, 33 minutes a game. He's playing a lot more than Naheem is. I would venture that the last few games, Kwadir's playing more than Chris. I don't I don't know. I don't see like tinkering with a starting lineup as being the problem now. Because it's not like it's 10 to nothing in the first 10 minutes of the game, and they're getting up to these terrible starts. And both of those, all those guys are playing a lot. I don't know that that's the answer, because I also believe, like, okay, say you start Malik, then what does Naheem give you off the bench? What is he going to give you that Malik didn't give you off the bench? Maybe he'll block a couple of shots. What else did he give you besides that? Maybe they throw him a couple of lobs. But what else does he give you? Especially given the way college basketball is formulated these days, there's not a lot of pure post players. So I don't know. I kind of like those guys coming off the bench. It reminds me of, now granted, this is a much better team when Dion came off the bench for Syracuse all those years ago. And people were saying, why doesn't he start? Why doesn't he start? Well, he's been pretty good off the bench. Like these guys have been good off the bench. Another thing to consider too is, there are some guys who might be affected if they have to come off the bench. They might play differently if they have to come off the bench. I don't think anybody's going to argue that Malik Brown is upset that he's not starting. Like he's
No,
coming in,
he's
he's
fine.
playing hard, he's playing well. He's not going to be a guy who's complaining because he's not starting. Not that I'm saying any of those other guys who are starting would come out of the starting lineup would be complaining that they weren't starting, but it seems like it's working pretty well. And sometimes you have to, as a coach, sort of massage egos a little bit, and you have to understand the player that you have and understand what would happen if you took this player out of the starting lineup, or if you put a different guy who was coming off the bench into the starting lineup. Like, what does that mean from a whole bunch of different perspectives?
Yeah, I like having energy off the bench. I agree with you, especially with the Naheem Malik dynamic. You know, another part of that dynamic too is, you know, early in the game, you're aware of this. You were a power forward, I think, in college. The referees in the beginning minutes, they set the tone, right? And it's so easy for a big to get a cheap foul in those first 4 or 5 minutes of the game when you're setting the tone. And it could be on any, you know, pushing in the block or an illegal screen. And I'm like, you know what? Let Naheem take that foul. Let him go out there against the Armando Bacots of the world. And maybe if you lob it into Naheem, you actually draw a foul on the other team's big. Yay, that's a great thing. I don't want Malik Brown to pick up that cheapy first 4 minutes set the tone foul because he is already leading the team, I think. He was earlier in the week in fouls committed per 40 minutes.
Well, and I would say part of that is because guards are getting beaten off the dribble, and he has to help. You know, I don't think, and he's a pretty risk reward kind of defender too. He tries to poke away the balls a lot. He tries to steal balls a lot, and he's also, you know, he's a little undersized at that position. He has to do a lot, especially if he's gonna like when they play Clemson. You know, he's gonna have to guard T.J. Hall on the perimeter. You know, Bacot is interesting because I think Bacot is a situation where Naheem would be effective for. You know, he's a low post guy for the most part. I mean, you watch
Yes.
North Carolina more than I do, but he's not going to go out and shoot a three. And so Naheem, that's a game. You know, I think these are sort of game by game situations. And I think that's a game when Naheem could be effective in that game.
Yeah, we'll have to see. You know, some of the other guys, I've talked to a couple of the bench guys, they seem to be relishing the role. You know,
Yeah.
when they're getting attention as a group, the subs and all this stuff. And sometimes I don't want to mess with a kid's head by moving him into the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's going well. It's going well. Those guys coming off the bench. And like I said, it's not like they're getting into a 10-nothing hole or something in these games. You know, so I don't see it. I don't, you know, they're 10-4. Let's face it, the games that they have lost have been against teams that during that game or on those days, and maybe, you know, 70 out of 100 times are better than Syracuse at this point, right? I mean, Gonzaga's having a little bit of a free fall right now. They haven't really beaten a good team, but and you know Virginia lost at Notre Dame, but you know these kinds of things happen. But I think if you were to, you know these teams that they've lost to at this point are arguably better, you know. And so do you really want to tinker with a lineup where, you know you've beaten teams that you should beat, and you've lost a couple teams that maybe are just a little bit better than you right now.
You know, it seems like I didn't think I would say this about this team that coming into the season because I thought with the man-to-man defense, we were going to be talking a lot about defense and it was going to be the key to a lot of games. And really, it seems like it's offense that's the key for this team. And the losses, they can't score. And granted, we're talking about teams that play great defense, like Virginia,
Yeah.
Tennessee, even Duke.
Duke's a good defensive team. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and they can't score. I think the four losses, they haven't scored more than 66 points. Meanwhile, in the 10 wins, they're scoring 79 or more every night out. And is it just the level of competition or is something else going on here where, you know, like what are teams doing to keep Syracuse from scoring? Because it seems to be pretty obvious at this point, Syracuse needs to score to win.
Yeah, I mean, Syracuse gets a lot of points though in transition. I mean, when they've won games, they've scored a lot of transition points. And Duke's a team that does not turn it over. They don't turn it over. I don't have a great
Neither does
memory
Virginia.
of the, or neither does Virginia, right? I don't have a great memory of Gonzaga or of Tennessee of those two games. But you know, Syracuse gets a lot of points in transition, and Duke was not going to let them get transition points. And good teams won't. I mean, good teams are gonna they're gonna say we don't want to get we don't need a defense we don't need an offensive rebound at this point. We're gonna go back and try to guard you and don't let you get back in transition. And also, you know, Duke didn't turn it over. And we, you know, we've talked, I wrote about it. We talked about the live ball turnovers. That's what was where they crushed Syracuse in that game. So, you know, I think Syracuse does score a lot of points from their defense. I think their defense has actually been pretty good. I
I
mean,
do
it
too.
was not very good at all in the second half of the Duke game, but like I said, a lot of that was turnovers and a lot of that was transition defense. And, you know, it's sometimes it's just depending upon where guys end up on the court during an offensive possession. It's sometimes hard to get guys to rotate back. It's a whole big thing that could happen. But you know, I their offense has been in those games, I think, not as good because they're not getting a ton of transition points. And they haven't shot it well in those games.
I think you're exactly right. When they can't turn people over, get the live ball turnovers, and that augments an offense that sometimes can
Can
get a little
stagnate in the half
stagnant
court.
in the half. Yeah,
Yeah.
stagnant in the half court.
Yeah.
How many times have we said that? We'll see where they go. Now, the interesting stretch coming up here. You've had this week off. They're in the middle of this of a week because they had the basically a bye over the weekend.
Right.
Got to get ready for I think, a deceptively tough Boston
I
College
do
team.
too.
And then they go on the road for two more, Carolina and Pitt back to back. I think this is a critical stretch for this team. They gotta, first of all, you have to make sure you protect your home floor, right?
Yeah.
And then
Yes.
eventually.
That, I mean, I think Boston College, people have remember them as the Boston College of old, where teams were beating them by 20, but that's not the case this year. They have a very, very good post player. I would argue, aside from PJ Hall, maybe the second best post player. Although, I know you're going to bring up Bacot, but I mean, in terms of the versatility, the way that these guys can play, he's very good. And it'll be interesting to see how Syracuse tries to guard him. And their guards are pretty good. They've got a bunch of smallish types of like guards and forwards who like and wings who and they can get out a little bit and they can shoot it a little bit. And I think that they're pretty good. I thought they were pretty good last year, and I think they're better this year. Going down to North Carolina is going to be tough. Bacot's going to be an interesting problem. I don't know how they're going to guard him, but aside from him is RJ Davis is playing great. They just are having a very good year this year, and they're playing at home, and they're very good at home. That's going to be a tough game. And Pittsburgh also is very good at home. And Pittsburgh is moving into desperation territory at this point. They're 0-3 in a conference. They played three good teams and have lost three games. And so they're going to be, I think, at some point, they need to win games. And they are tough at home. That's a tough place to play. Yeah, I think Syracuse has to win a couple of these games.
Yeah, that Pittsburgh team also is going to be a little motivated because they've lost up here
Yeah,
at Syracuse.
that's right.
You mentioned, and they obviously they've I think they've by the time this podcast gets published, they'll have played another game over the weekend. But at 0-3 right now in the league, but home losses to Clemson and Carolina and a road
Yeah,
loss at Syracuse,
it's tough.
they're not. Yeah, they might be 0-3, but I still think that's a Pitt team that can come on and I think they're good, better than the
Yeah, I
rest
mean,
of them.
their best player has not played great the last couple of games. I mean, he wasn't that good against Syracuse, and I think he struggled in their last game too. We're talking about Blake Henson, and he's very good, I think, and he just hasn't quite. He's in a little bit of a funk for them, but he's a
And
very good
you're
player.
talking about Boston College, you mentioned Quinton Post, who, by the way, has the perfect surname for a post player, right?
But he doesn't really play in the post, but he kind of does.
Well, a little seven, he's 7 footer.
He's 7-footer, right?
7 footer from the Netherlands.
Yep.
Do we know anybody like that?
We do. Those two guys actually were very good friends.
Yeah, they played on the national team together, I think.
Yeah.
But another guy that's really helped BC this year, that some Syracuse fans may not be aware of yet, they will be next Wednesday night. Claude L. Harris, transfer from Charleston Southern, 6'3 guards, averaging like 14.5 points per game. He's had no trouble transitioning to Power Five level. That kid's good. They're pairing him with that Zachary kid.
Yeah, I think he's pretty tough. I think Zachary's pretty tough.
They are. That'll be the backcourt matchup between JJ and Judah against those other two kids will be pivotal, I think.
Yes.
Pivotal.
Pivotal in the
Pivot
post. Yes.
in the post.
Right.
So we'll see where that goes. As they look ahead here, Syracuse has had this long quad one win drought.
Yeah.
It's gone on going on 2 years now. No shame in it. Like in on the surface, it's like, okay, you're losing to good teams. We get it. But this team that still has, I think, a chance at an NCAA tournament bid, if they can get one or two quad one wins, where do they get them?
Oh God. I mean, they've been so
Yeah.
good at home, so you would assume the teams that they play at home, the quad one chances that they have at home, which would be at this point North Carolina, right? They play them at home. I haven't memorized this guy. Who else do they play at home? They play Miami at home. I don't know where Miami will be at that point.
I think Miami right now would be considered quad two, but you never know where the Hurricanes could end up. Clemson right now is solidly quad one
Right.
for a home
I
game.
was a little bit stunned by that Clemson Miami
Yeah.
score. I mean, I watched most of that game, and I was a little bit stunned because I also watched some of VCU St. Bonaventure in that game too. I had like the dual screen thing going. I was a little stunned how they just ran away with it in the second half of that game. Miami did. And they didn't have Wooga Poplar.
I
So
know.
he's hurt. So, I, again, that was a little bit of a stunning result for me because Clemson's usually pretty good on defense and they scored like 90 on them. I mean, they're a very good offensive team, very good on offense.
And much better at home on offense, but they got, you're right, they scored 60 second half
Yes, in the
points in the
second half, in the
60,
second half.
which was incredible. You know, they finished with like whatever, 95 or something. That was a surprise to me. It wasn't a surprise that Miami beat Clemson, especially since it was in Miami. But to
Right, the
beat
way
it
they
in
did
that
it.
fashion,
Yeah, the way they did it was a little was just to me a little bit stunning.
and without Wooga,
Without Wooga. And
man.
I think Clemson's good.
Yeah, you've been on Clemson for a long time.
Their guards are good. I love PJ Hall. They got a couple of glue guys too, gluish guys that I like too.
Shiflin, Ian Shiflin, and then the other kid, the tall kid that can shoot, is his last name, Wiggins, I think, is
He's number 12, I think.
Yeah, you know what I'm looking at there.
I
Yeah,
know who you're talking
I can
about.
see it
I
in
think
my
he is.
mind's eye. So in this league right now, you got Duke, Carolina, Miami, Clemson, probably we're keeping Virginia there despite that road loss at Notre Dame. So you got, five teams there. Somebody in this league's going to get up to like number six in the
What about
conference.
Wake? I mean, Wake's also been very good.
Yeah, I was going to say, who do you think can be that
I
team?
think Wake's the next team. I think that's another team that's very good. I think they're very good.
Syracuse is gonna get mentioned there, but at least because they beat Pitt, they have a. I know it was at home, and there'll be a rematch soon. Who else? But you like Virginia Tech?
Yeah, oddly, I have not seen them play at all this year. I've not seen one Virginia Tech game. I usually like, for some reason, I've seen a million Clemson games. And I obviously have seen all the Syracuse games. I've seen some Virginia games. I don't think I have seen Virginia Tech at all this year. I mean, I know they have the two guards, but I don't know who else they have really.
The big kid that's really helping him out this year, because the transfer they had last year that was big, Grant Basile, he's gone. But Lynn Kidd, big strong kid, plays down low. He's having a breakout season. He's having a so he's the guy that's really stepped up to help with Hunter Couture, and the guard
Padilla.
Sean Padilla,
Padilla.
Padula. So yeah, and I always think a Mike Young team is always such a well-coached team. They know how they want to play.
They're a pretty disciplined team. And he always has, he doesn't he always has a bunch of like guards and then a big guy. And a big guy, the big guys usually can do a bunch of things. So
And that's Lynn Kidd.
they're always interesting, that team,
And it's a tough place to go play.
It is.
I don't think Syracuse has to go there this year, so they luck out. They don't have to go into the castle. So we'll see where they go. What's the biggest thing Syracuse has to do in this week off leading up to Boston College as we wrap up this edition of the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast? One thing, if you were a coach, what are you harping on this week?
Shoot, 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 shoot. Keep shooting. Shoot a ton of shots. Shoot a ton of threes. Shoot, shoot, shoot. That's what I would harp on. They need to get better at that.
That sounds good to me. I think I'll go right along with you there. That, and I think I might have had a couple of talks to the team about you let me talk to the referees, as the coach. Let me talk to the referee, not you guys. And things will work out much better for you there. The guys who get to talk to the referees are the fourth year seniors or fifth year grad students. The referees recognize them more and maybe can referees don't like to be talked to by freshmen and
Well,
sophomores.
they also don't. There's a certain way you can talk to them too, and maybe
Yes.
that to improve as well.
Sidle over to them while someone's taking a
Sure.
free throw and no one's looking at you. Yes.
Again, these are hard things to do. I mean, it's in the heat of the moment. It's very hard not to get frustrated, especially if you think you got fouled. But the problem is that you can't. If you stand there and complain about it, number one, the call is not going to get changed, and number two, you're probably not going to get another call. And meanwhile, the other team is running down to the other court, the other side of the court, and scoring. So I get the frustration of it. I really do. I get it.
Yeah. I think, to let people in on this a little bit, you and I come at this with a little bit of perspective here. You played college basketball, so whereof you speak at times. Like, you know how you feel when you've been fouled and you haven't gotten the whistle. My dad
I may have
blew
complained a time or two in my career.
My dad blew a whistle. My dad refereed high school basketball way back in the day. My dad was the dad who would show up at my high school games, and if I complained or about something, I would hear it from him. Like instead of my dad yelling at the referee, my dad would yell at me. So you learn, right?
You do, yeah. You learn.
Anyway, Donna, listen, this is fun. We'll talk again real soon, and look for all of Donna's stuff coming out this week on Syracuse.com as we get ready for Syracuse's next game against Boston College on Wednesday at the JMA Wireless Dome.
And we're going to be wildly rested because we have an entire weekend off. I'm so
Yes,
excited about it.
exactly right. For Donna DeTota, I'm Mike Waters. We'll see you here again next time.
Join us next time for the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, presented by Krause Health, the exclusive healthcare partner for Syracuse Athletics.